Blog Talk Radio.
Radio Network. World Transformed is an audio production of Speculist Media, and you can find us online at worldtransformed.com. This program explores a convergence of emerging technologies and emerging possibilities which are at the heart of this, the greatest period of transformation in human history. Our world is changing in ways that are difficult to predict, sometimes even difficult to imagine. The World Transformed is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead, one that will be here sooner than you think, and one that you have an important role to play in bringing about. We're not here so much to tell you about the future as we are to encourage you to think about your future and to consider what may be the biggest transformation of them all, the one that will occur in your life, in your world, the one that begins with recognizing and acting on the vast possibilities that are unfolding before you and that ends somewhere beyond the reach of the human imagination. So, when does that amazing future begin? Well, today is the day. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil, how are you?
Well, I am super fantastic. How are you, my friend?
Man, I am doing great. Having a good week. I hope you are, too.
I am having a really productive week, having just a lot of great things going on, and some of which we'll be delving into here this evening. But, week's going by very nicely for me. I should say, week is going better for us here in Colorado than last week did. We didn't talk any about the floods. And probably worth mentioning that we have had a once in a millennium event in Colorado over the last few weeks with flooding that is just completely unprecedented.
It's surprising to me, Phil, because I would expect Colorado to see flooding in the spring, you know, from ice melt, you know, snow melt and things like that. This time of year,
yeah, when it happens,
surprising.
Exactly.
Yeah,
it doesn't usually happen that often, but when it does happen, it's because we've had a lot of snow melt or a lot of snowpack. It all melts really fast, and the rivers overflow their banks. But this was rain. This was just rain pouring down from the sky, and the rivers overflowed their banks, so the lakes overflowed, and you know, it's basically a very dry place, and it can't handle, you know, 10 inches of rain in a few hours. It's just
right.
It's not something that has ever happened.
Well, you don't have deep in a dry place. You don't tend to have deep river beds, and
right.
And so you know, when the rain hits like that, it's just nowhere to go but out. And I there was an unfortunate loss of life. How many folks? I know that the numbers of missing have been improving. People are being found and things like that, but. There's still some folks missing, and a number of folks have passed away.
The number of deaths was still very low. I haven't heard that it's gone above 10 or 15 people dead. I don't think.
I think the number I heard was 12, but that was a couple of days ago. Seemed like.
So. Okay. Yeah, it's fairly low. I mean, obviously, it's more than you want to have happen. But the good thing, if there is a good side to all this, the good thing about the number of missing people, they're really just people unaccounted for, by and large.
They're people
you know, they were on that side of the river and we haven't been able to get over there yet, and there's no phone, right? So we don't know, but most of the unaccounted for people are slowly showing up, and we expect that will continue to be the case for the large majority of them. So that will be good news as more and more of them show up. But it was really interesting. I had put up on Facebook, there was a collection of pictures from the Atlantic just really captured the devastation in a lot of places, and just how strange it has been. You know, just this whole business of like towns being cut off and stuff, and things that we've never heard of. And Great. All of them just wonderful. You know, I'd give a Pulitzer to any one of those photos. But I made the mistake of starting to read the comments. And don't read comments of things, folks. That's my
advice. That's a bad idea.
Want to make good use of your time. But it was really interesting because, you know, the trolls are everywhere. And everyone's always got some
It's
you know,
amazing
really obnoxious
that someone
thing
could troll that, you know. It's like I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, first thing out of somebody's mouth was, well, you know why this happens is because they live in places that get flooded, and that's why their house gets wiped out, and then they're going to go rebuild it there, and it's going to happen again, and I have no sympathy. And I'm like, okay, well, you're an ass.
Yeah, like 1,000 years ago, it flooded there. You know?
Secondly, the next comment was somebody said, look, I'm from Longmont, Colorado, okay? My house was completely overwhelmed by the flood, and where we live wasn't on the 500-year plan for flooding, okay? It was, this isn't like the third time we've rebuilt on the riverbank. You know, if you want to make a case against those people, and even then, I think that's pretty harsh, okay? I think it's pretty harsh to go, you know, giving people a hard time who've just lost their home anyhow. And you hear that sometimes when there's hurricanes and stuff. It's like, well, they decided to, you know, build a house on the beach.
New Orleans is below sea level. You know, how many times did I hear that after Katrina? New Orleans is below sea level, and, you know, it's a stupid place for, well, whatever. You know, it's there.
Yeah.
It's a city. It's an American city, and real people, you know, lost everything, lost their lives.
Yeah,
you know, it's
everything, including their
so,
lives.
You know, how about a little heart, you know?
Exactly. So
it's amazing. Yeah.
Foregoing the comments, and I did manage to find the real bright side to all this, which I mentioned on Facebook, and I've gotten some additional information on this since then. You know, this time of year, it's not unprecedented for us to have snow. It's entirely possible that that rain could have come in the form of snow with an appropriate level of cold front moving in, and they say just like in the city of Boulder, right, where I don't even know how many inches of rain fell or what period of time, but the National Weather Service or NOAA, whoever's up there in Boulder, said, yes, this would have been about 200 inches of snow if it had come in the form of snow. So I mean, it would have been the end of the world blizzard for Colorado. You know, the death toll would have been unbearably higher, unbelievably higher, had it been a snowstorm rather than a series of rainstorms or a series of snowstorms. And then, you know what would happen? It would have flooded anyway because when it melted, we would have had the floods anyhow.
Yeah,
so,
well, you know, I guess the good thing about a snow melt flood is that you kind of know it's coming. Or you have some indication. We got this huge amount of snow up there. Guys, it's gonna flood, you know, in a month. You know, you can kind of count on it. But, I'm glad Colorado's getting through it. You know, maybe there'll be enough moisture in the grounds and everything to forego some of the fires, maybe, you know.
Unfortunately, those come in the spring and early summer, and things will
true.
Likely have dried out by then. But you know, it's likely that we won't have a drought. We won't be talking drought for a while, so that'll be good.
It's funny about those trolls. Name me a place anywhere in the United States where there's not some danger of some sort of, you know, catastrophe. You know, if you're in California, there's going to be earthquakes. There's, you know, there's fires. You know, where it gets dry. There's a risk of flooding, obviously, and you know, of course, Louisiana, there's you know, you got hurricanes and everything like that. So I don't know.
In the
middle of the country,
you
got tornadoes. You know,
poor people shouldn't live in a trailer in Oklahoma. It's like, well, they're poor. You know,
and they live. Yeah,
they live in Oklahoma. What do you expect? You know, I think it's pretty outrageous that some people jump to that. But that's okay.
Yeah.
we're not gonna let that kind of attitude get us down. We got big, exciting things to talk about. So much exciting stuff to talk about. Before we jump into our – I've got two really big topics tonight. One is the Life Extension Conference. We want to talk about that coming up this weekend. And the other one, obviously, is we're going to talk about the world's longest book. But before we delve into that, Stephen, you got some other stuff that – anything going on in your world that you want to share?
Well, you know what? It sort of would lead in a little bit into the Life Extension conference. Did you hear that Google is getting involved in this in life extension? I found that to be fascinating when I read that earlier today. It's
I've only seen the headline, so tell us about it. What's going on?
Well, it's actually a sub company of Google, and I'm sorry I don't have the article open in front of me. You might want to Google it while I'm talking here, Phil. But yeah, at any rate, they are, they're getting involved in this business. They see it as a business. They see the opportunity to move in ways that perhaps drug companies cannot. And what do I mean by that is that, you know, to a large extent, pharmaceuticals and biotech companies, it's a data business, and Google is in data. You know, that's their thing.
Yeah.
They believe that there may be an opportunity to at least build some of the underlying technology that could then perhaps be taken by a drug company, licensed by a drug company, and make medicine out of. And you know, of course, those companies are probably better at getting things through the regulatory process and everything. But if Google does some of the science behind it and behind the scenes, it could be huge. And and imagine what people would be willing to pay, you know, for the type of thing that would prolong their life indefinitely. You know, it's just also, it's just a good thing to do, and I think you could argue that Google is just one of these companies that's not afraid of thinking big. You know, I mean, they're working on the self-driving car. You know, they're much more obviously than a search engine company. They've gone much, you know, far beyond that in the last decade, and you know, so they're thinking big, and I applaud them.
The thing I love about Google is, yeah, absolutely, that they keep approaching problems that, while I totally believe that things can be done in these areas, it still surprises me to see a big name company, even Google, but a big name established company saying, yes, we're taking that thing on, a company that
right.
everybody knows and everybody deals with, that says self-driving cars or we're going to cure aging. You know, I mean, it just warms my heart. Okay, to say
it's right up there with
something
SpaceX.
As iconic as absolutely.
You know, if it's something that we just really geek out about is going to be stuff like this and SpaceX and things, you know, it makes us happy to be living in the 21st century. It just really does. This is the sort of thing that you would expect living in the future. So
right,
and here we are living in the future. So that's awesome stuff.
Exactly. And the other thing I really love about it is that they keep surprising us with new things, and I hope they continue to. I'm looking forward to what else Google comes up with in the years to come. And yeah, very much looking forward to seeing them take these things on. One of the great lessons that will be learned, one of the great learning points for the public around this, I think, is going to be You can imagine that there's going to be all kinds of cynicism and all kinds of hand-wringing about this. The critical editorials write themselves. They've already been written. You can just rehash that stuff.
Well, you know, it's just like on one hand, you know, this is so stupid. They're never going to ever be able to contribute anything to life extension. You know, life is what it is. We're born, we grow up, we grow old, we die. You're going to have people on one side saying that, and you're going to have people on the other side saying, oh, my God, they're going to do it. And I think of the social crisis that will bring on. And you might
right.
even have a few people that do both, you know, which is hilarious. Nevertheless, hey, go for it, Google. I think
go for it, Google, because the big lesson that the public will learn that the naysayers, I think, will eventually come to terms with, is that when you talk about healthy life extension, you're going to be talking about people not dying of cancer. You're going to be talking about people not, withering away with Parkinson's disease or Alzheimer's or one of these other degenerative
heart
diseases.
Heart disease
people not dying
diabetes.
Of heart disease. Or type, yeah. Yeah, exactly. That, in fact, when you talk about life extension, you're talking about solving all the problems that everyone thinks we should be working on from a medical perspective. That no one is opposed to trying to save people's lives when it comes to cancer or diabetes or Parkinson's or Alzheimer's or any of the rest of them. It's only when you call it life extension that somehow it becomes a big problem. And I think people are going to turn that corner, and I think they'll turn it pretty quickly when they see that that's what's actually happening.
Yeah. Yeah, I know that I'll be in line for it.
Yeah, absolutely. I've got no qualms whatsoever. I'm ready to go. Okay, so we got a lot to talk about, and the first thing we should talk about is we've got the big. Let me find it now. I thought I had it here. Yeah, the Singularity Network is going to be at the Radical Life Extension Conference in Washington D.C. That's coming up this Sunday, September 22nd. It's going to be from 5 until 7 p.m. Eastern time, so adjust your calendars accordingly. I'll put the link to the Facebook page in the chat room real fast. And I've also got another link here to an article about it. And
we are, in a way, going to be involved in this, Phil.
That's right. We're sort of mini sponsors of this event now, because we've purchased, on behalf of you, our listeners, 5 questions to be asked at the event. There will be a video feed for the event. Follow the links I've just put in the chat room. They're also up on the worldtransform.com as an update to the post that talks about our interview with Paul 2 weeks ago. I'll also add both of those links to tonight's show notes. Everyone, plan on joining for that video feed if you're not in the D.C. area and not able to go to the actual event. But we get to ask 5 questions. We've purchased 5 questions on behalf of Speculous Media, and I'm ready to open that up. We don't have a huge crowd in the chat room tonight, but Ken or anyone else who joins, if you've got an idea for a question, go ahead and feed that into the chat room. And anyone listening, you can also leave a comment at worldtransform.com. Look for the program about the world's longest book. And if you have a good idea for a question, get it to us by Friday, because we've got to get those in a day ahead of the event. And I'd be interested in entertaining anybody's questions. Stephen and I will make the final selection. And with that in mind, Stephen, do you have any questions that come to mind right off the top of your head?
I'd like to know time frame. Now, this is probably the least popular question that could be asked, but it's really the one that I'd like to know, because it's something I'm on record already having done, and I may be proven to be, much too optimistic, but it was about 5 years ago that I said 14 years until the very first life extension medicine. And that it may brought to us in the form of something for diabetes, heart, cancer, that sort of thing. But in fact, what it's doing is addressing aging. We're well into that, and so we're
right.
Probably we're less than a decade away from when I had hoped we would see something like that. And so I would ask, the experts here on the panel, what do y'all believe? What time frame are we looking at? And I'd like to hear from those guys on that. So,
okay, that's an excellent question. When you relate it to ongoing medical developments, mm-hmm. you almost can't help but think, well, when did the radical, the age of radical life extension begin? Was it in the recent past, or was it, I don't know, maybe when doctors started washing their hands, right, and people started access to clean drinking water and some of those
kinds of
things.
The germ theory of disease, when that was published, when people started understanding that, that's what kills people.
When
and then
leaching
people started living
became
past
a less
their
40s. Popular medical treatment. Yeah, yeah, exactly. All kinds of milestones that have been passed along the way, but I think we're not there yet. Everything that has come to now is prelude.
Well, yeah, those things that you mentioned, Phil, obviously those are huge, but I don't think that really touches, none of those things really address aging, do they?
They do extend life, but they don't. Yeah, you're right. They don't
really address aging. That's what we're talking about. Obviously, people used to die
right.
before they were old. You live till your 40s and you you were killed by your doctor who was trying to do something good for you.
Well, you know what? I will take that back. One of them maybe does is that actually does probably relate to aging is clean drinking water. Just because people used to be kind of dehydrated. They didn't, based on the access that they had to clean drinking water, and in fact, that accelerates the whole aging process if you're not getting enough water. So in fact, probably having clean drinking water was at least something that prevented the acceleration of aging. Didn't push
right.
us in the other direction, but at least straightened us out as far as at least put the brakes on where unnatural aging was concerned, I suppose.
You know, one of the great drivers of civilization has been said to be beer, and in part because it was easier to keep the alcohol within the drink helped keep it from being the sort of thing that would make you sick.
Right.
So I can just imagine a whole populations of the ancient world slightly tipsy pretty much all the time.
Need of a drink of water, because you know how thirsty.
Yeah, really, yeah, and probably dehydrated on top of that. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. And in ancient Rome, they were drinking it out of lead vessels on top of that. So you know, it's just
particularly
those
in power. Yes, it was. we've come a long way just with the indoor plumbing, folks. It's that was a huge thing.
It's true. Okay, well, that's a good one. Mine is related.
Okay.
And I think what I would my first question that I can think of just kind of personalizes a little bit. And my question is, look, I'm 51 years old. What do I do? Okay, if I want to get there, right? In fact, maybe the question is, what are my chances? Right? I'm 51 years old. What are my chances of making it to actuarial escape velocity? And if I do have a chance, how do I get there? That would be my kind of two-part question, I think, on radical life extension. And that's not a question that has been avoided in the past. You'll get answers to that. So I think that if you look at the panel that's lined up there of speakers, I think we might hear some pretty interesting thoughts on that. Well, we'll leave the other three up to our listeners. If anyone wants to pop something into the chat room while we're talking this evening, we'll entertain that or leave a comment. Or I'm sorry, Stephen, I don't want to step on you if you had another good one.
Well, you know, we've had on the show several times Aubrey de Grey and
mm-hmm.
his SENS program, Strategies for Engineered Negligible Senescence, or
mm-hmm.
SENS, is his program. And basically his idea is that there are seven things that make people age, and, what we need to do is break these problems down and solve each of them. And we've had him on the show and asked, what do we get out of solving one of them, or two or three or whatever? And, it was a disappointing answer, wasn't it? Because what he said was, well, you got to solve all seven. It's like we
right.
have seven bullets flying at us at the same time, and
right.
you can dodge four of them, and the three remaining will kill you.
Right.
The body's, basically is engineered to last a certain amount of time in order to number one have children for the next generation, and then even last long enough so that we can help our grandchildren. It's the grandparent hypothesis on why humans live so long. I think it's come down to this. We believe that the reason we live so long is because of language. We have so much as older people that we can contribute that once we had language, it was it became a survival thing. To be able to live long enough to help grandchildren along, and so then you
so
know
that
grand-
would make Am I right? That would make a population outsurvive another population, right? Because there's no inherent advantage.
Yeah, because you got elders around.
Individual.
You got the wise guys around. They know stuff.
Yeah.
You know, they remember well. You know, when we had a drought when I was a little kid. You know, 60 years ago. You know, we marched towards that mountain range that you see off in the distance there, and we found we found water and food there. And that's what we ought to do now since it's a drought again. Stuff like that, you know, that, you know, you live long enough, and therefore the entire population benefits from that knowledge. And so it basically the population that has people that live that long benefits from it, and therefore that's reinforced. Every generation tends to live a little longer. And so that's part of the deal. So, you know, so we live a certain period of time, but there's not really been a need, you know, evolutionarily speaking, for people to live longer than we already live. So if we choose to live longer, it'll be up to us to go forward and solve the problems that that make us old and die. So
have I lost the thread? What was the question that you would make out of that?
The question was, was there something else that I would ask? So my question is this. Yes, it wasn't you losing it. It was me losing it. Aubrey de Grey says there's seven things to solve. Does the panel agree? Are there other issues that need to be solved?
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah.
Where are we at in the progress of solving these things? What's the latest news on?
Have we nailed any of them yet? Or
yeah.
80%
do we know where we're at? We even have it outlined as to what we need to do on some of these things. So, I would ask how it's coming in those areas.
Yes, and if they fix all seven of those and we still age, I want my money back, right? I think we're
exactly
for ending aging. No, just kidding, Aubrey. I'm sure that those are right and they will fix the problem. But be interesting. It actually would be very interesting to get the perspectives of the panel on that, because one of the things that you see in this discussion is the different perspectives on what aging is, how it happens. I mean, biologically, what it actually is. Because Aubrey talks in very specific terms. He talks about it from the standpoint of an engineer in terms of specific kinds of damage that occur to cells. And when you look at it at the cellular level, it makes perfect sense. But then, you know, there's the genetic component. There's our, I can't think of the word now, the telomeres, right? These odd little doohickeys in our bodies that get shorter and shorter.
Every
time they reproduce, they get shorter. That was associated with aging, but now there's good reason to believe that actually is aging itself. So if you fix that, what does that do to the cell damage? If you fix the cell damage, what does that do to that? How do those two things relate to each other? What other models are there for how aging could be occurring, and how can those be addressed? So it promises to be a really interesting couple of hours, and I'm looking forward to getting answers to our three questions and for any others that anyone might want to propose. If you have some, leave them in our chat box here, or just drop a comment over at worldtransform.com.
Absolutely.
All right.
I think
we're ready to talk about the world's longest book.
Sounds good.
Now, the title of our show tonight actually comes from that's a joke that James Taranto does at Best of the Web. I don't know if you've ever seen this. One of his little joke headlines is, sometimes it's world's shortest book. You know, like the headline would be world's shortest book, and the story would be like, you know, supermodels
something
who
political.
Went out with Phil Bauermaster, you know, something like that. Right?
But usually more political than that, yeah.
Usually more political than that, but yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it's as soon as you see this topic, you go, yeah, there's not a lot there. I'm sorry, what's that?
You're going to get yourself in trouble, Soraya, Phil. I'm sorry.
That's what I'm saying. There'd be one name. There'd be exactly one name.
Exactly.
That's why it's a short book. Yeah. But, you know, and the world's longest book is always something where you figure it's just somebody blathering on and on, or it's some you know, person who's got a lot of faults or something like that. So anyway, it's a joke when Taranto does it, because he's always talking about some topic about which much could be said. And we talked last week about the first step, taking the first step. You know, great ideas to transform the world, and what would the first step be to making those things happen? And one of the ideas that we discussed was this notion of let's write a book. Let's write a book full of great ideas about how to transform the world. And that would, in fact, be our first step towards making some of these things happen, towards getting people talking about them, getting people thinking about them, and making some of these amazing things happen. And I believe that if we do this thing correctly, and it's starting to gain some momentum now, as we'll discuss here in a few minutes, this could be, if not the world's longest book, one of the world's longest books, or a nice long book, anyway. Certainly, you can't have too many great ideas about how to change the world for the better now, can you?
Nope. And, I would imagine, Phil, that not every person that writes something for this book is going to limit themselves to one idea either. It's, you know, there's going to be, you know, if initially we have 99 authors, I would imagine that it wouldn't just be 99 ideas. It's going to be lots and lots of ideas from lots of people. So,
and in fact, this is an idea I've been sort of batting around in my head. It's like, do we let people write more than one? How many do we let people write? Because, you know, if somebody writes 1,000, they're, you know, I guess it's okay because it's open-ended. But maybe there's something to be said for putting your best idea in the book. You know what I mean? It's like, I'll tell you what, come up with one really good one. And then if you got 999 more, we'll do more books, or you know there'll be other opportunities to do this. But we might actually put an upper limit. It might even be one. I'm not sure. Some of these details have to be worked out. But you're absolutely right. Anyone who comes up with a good idea is a good source for another good idea. I think that that's just a fact of human nature. On the other hand, I think we're all potentially good sources of good ideas. I think everybody's got a great idea. Everyone has a flash of insight at one point or another in their life, and this is an opportunity maybe to capture a little bit of that, because we want to make this a massive collaboration between people all over the world. We want to get as many people as we can involved around this, and we truly want to improve the world by organizing people around great ideas that can bring those kinds of improvements about, change the world for the better by starting to focus on what are the things that would make that happen. So, plus, I think you and I are both in agreement that if we publish the world's longest book, or I don't care if it's in the top 10 world's longest books, that's a pretty awesome thing to do, right?
just to say, yeah, we were involved in that project. Yeah, but you're absolutely right, Phil.
Yeah, it's an attention getting device too. The more people that we can get on it, I think it has a real possibility of snowballing. So we talked a little bit last week about, okay, so if the first step is creating the book, then what's the first step to creating the book? And I think that the first step to creating this bigger book, this big global project of a book, is to create a shorter one. And this one is what we're calling The World Transformed, the abridged edition. And this will be both an ebook and a print book. I don't know that the full version will ever be able to exist as a print book. We'll look at that as we go. You know, we'll see how many authors we get and how many chapters we get. But this first one, because it will be constrained as to how much content it will have, the abridged edition will definitely provide it in both forms. And this will be a book of great ideas about how to transform the world, how to make the world a better place, with really short chapters. And we're opening up invitations as we speak. I mentioned it last week. I'll mention it again this week, and people are going to be hearing from us in the weeks to come. But anyone who's ever been on this show is invited to write a chapter of The World Transformed, the abridged edition. I've described it as a book with 99 chapters. I've done a rough estimate that the number of guests we've had on the show over the years will get us there. If not, I think we have enough, you know, friends and connections to the show, listeners and so forth, that we can get to 99. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so. We've been doing the show since 2005, you know, and really, as a weekly show since, what, about 2008, maybe 2007. And so, yeah, it's and we have had just a mountain of guests on the show. So very interesting people. And if we limited ourselves to that, I think we could still get 99.
We've done in the vicinity of 300 shows. If one out of three had a unique guest on it, and keep in mind that we did World Transforms with four or five guests, and we've done a lot of shows with multiple guests, then we're there, right? But even if we're not there, I don't think we'll say we come up with 60 who were guests on the show, and either we don't have enough to fill up the difference, or the others just aren't interested. We'll come up with those other 39. I don't see that as a big challenge, especially
not
when
really.
You hear who we've already got signed up. But we'll get to that. We'll get to that in a moment.
your marketing is showing. You're teasing me all.
we'll come back to who we've got already
that
got signed
in
up.
One moment.
I'm pretty psyched about that. But you know, not to name names, we can throw out a few names of people who I expect will write a chapter. Steven, I think it's a given that you will write a chapter. Obviously, I'm going to. I think anyone who's been a host is invited to. So Michael Darling can write a chapter. PJ should write a chapter for us. Have we had other hosts? Obviously, Mike Sargent's not available to do that. But anyone who's been a host.
Brian Wong would be an awesome author. Would love to have his take on energy or anything else he wanted to write on.
One of our first guests ever, Brian Wong. Michael Anisimov clearly would be a good person to bring into the book. And we've had a lot of others. You know, if you go back over the list, it's a pretty deep bench we've got of people who've been on the show and who have great ideas about the future. Well, Christine Peterson, I think we can pretty much say that Christine will do it. Well, we can't say that for sure, but I'm going to go ahead and say, I bet, Stephen, I bet you. I bet if we ask.
Well,
I bet if you ask.
Here's
you
the problem.
Do it.
She's going to have too many great ideas to limit herself to one. We'll bend the rule probably for some of these folks.
Narrowing her down to one great idea. Exactly. Well, anyway, I look forward to the next few weeks because I'm going to be each day putting an invitation out to one or two people, and hopefully each week I'll be able to report on who else we've signed up. Just like building up to the World Transformed, you remember when we did those special series in years past, when week by week we'd say, hey, we've also got this person, and this person's going to be on. This person's going to be on. Now we'll be talking about who's going to be helping us. Who's going to be helping us write the book? And it's going to be a tremendously exciting experience. Just watching all that unfold, putting that team together, and getting that book written and getting that book out. But again, that's just the beginning because you know that would be a pretty cool project in and of itself. If we had thought of that just as its own project, that would have been pretty cool. But no, that's just the first step for this bigger project of creating the world's largest book, of getting as many people as we possibly can to do the same thing, to write a brief description of their best idea for something that will make the world better. And, you know, we'll have some pretty well-defined rules in place about what's going to be acceptable and what's not going to be acceptable, both in our abridged edition and then in the in the broader, you know, online ebook edition, the full edition that we'll be putting together. We're going to be looking for short essays, short chapters, 5 to 1500 words. I'm currently saying, and we'll see if that works for us. Where people propose an idea for making the world a better place. They're going to describe what the idea is. They're going to talk about how this idea could be brought about, and then, if possible, explain what role they personally can play in bringing that thing about, if there is one, and talk about what the first step is, right? You know, how we get from this being a great idea to this being reality. Now, the ideas can be about anything, I think, it's fair to say, with a couple of exceptions. But if people want to talk about medicine, if they want to talk about technology, energy, if they want to talk about government, the environment, education, how to resolve conflicts, anything that makes the world better, okay? Anything that this will improve the world. But there's a couple of caveats here. You can't propose something that already exists, okay? So you can't write in and say, I've got a great idea. Cell phones with a whole lot of computer features that take, you know, pictures and have apps running on them. Because
wonderful
smartphones
idea,
already exist.
But it's been done.
Yeah, smartphones exist. You can't submit capitalism as an idea, right? You know, it exists, okay? So, or socialism or any other of our we'll republish the list of 100 isms. You know, self-driving cars, 3D printers, heart transplants, Twitter, these are all great things, but you can't suggest them as ideas unless you have some original and unique idea about something to do with that thing, right? So if you've got a completely original invention, bring it. Or if you've got something completely original to do with something that already exists, bring it, okay? As long as it's an idea that that makes the world a better place. And I think the only other restriction we would put on it is the same one that we put on the speculus, the same one we put on the show, is that, you know, don't promote your political or religious or anti-political or anti-religious views as a great idea to improve the world, primarily because those views already exist, and also because we're looking for new ideas, right? Not just having the same arguments that we've had over and over. So we'll have the first 99 authors publish their contributions. We'll compile those together. We'll print that book out. I want us to do a big crowdfunding project to raise enough money that we can distribute a large number of these books once they're done. There's two goals I have for that. One is I want to be able to provide at least an electronic copy of this book to any school who wants it. Okay, so any high school or college or any public library, at least we can give them an electronic copy of the book. And the second is we're just going to seed the authoring of the book. And the way we'll do that is we'll give out, I like to say 10,000. I don't know why. It just sounds like a lot of books to me. We'll give out 10,000 copies of this book, and we'll ask each of these people to do a couple of things. First, read the book and think about those ideas. Secondly, to pass the book on, either to give their copy to someone else or buy a copy or maybe two or three copies and spread them on to someone else, and to write one great idea for the book. So that everyone who is given a copy is asked to pass that copy of the book on and is asked to make a contribution of one great idea to the unabridged full edition of the book. And
this will be, unlike most books that are just dead on a shelf somewhere, you're talking about a living book here. This
is
something,
yes,
that grows over time and changes over time as ideas increase and build on one another. I can imagine, you know, whole chapters in response to previous chapters, you know,
exactly.
And building on,
yeah.
So it's going to be an exciting project.
It's going to be tremendous fun. I've put a rough timeline in place for it. Steven and I are using Google Docs, of course, to manage this project so far. And I roughed out a timeline earlier this week where we get the first edition of the full book done by roughly the end of 2015. That would be a big goal, and that's kind of ambitious because we'd have to get the crowdfunding done. We'd have to get the 99 chapter version written. We'd have to get an online system in place where people can submit their ideas. We'd have to have some means of vetting those, approving or disapproving those, and then some way of cutting the whole process off and saying, okay, that's it. The first edition of the book is done. But if we can accomplish all those steps in that period of time, I think we can have a tremendous resource for the world in, what is that, Q4 2015 is about 2 years from now, right? About a 2 year lifespan for the book, which, by the way, within about 2 years we would have worked through all the topics in the original 99, so we'd be ready to move on to the broader topics in the world's longest book. So at that point, we'd have an infinite number of topics to talk about on the show, Stephen. like we ever run out of things to talk about anyway, but
exactly.
We'll have to start doing 10 hours a day, I think, 6 days a week. It's going
to... Yeah, we'll have to quit our day jobs and just do this all the time. But,
I think so.
Yeah.
I think we owe it to the world, basically. So that's the idea. That's the idea in very broad strokes. And I feel like I've left something out. Have I not mentioned something about the process? I talked about that we would crowdfund, that we would ask everybody who receives a copy to write a chapter, that we'd ask everyone who receives a copy to give 1 to 3 copies to friends. See, I think the question is, will it go viral? Right? If we pick the right people to seed it with, it will. And I think if we pick the right group of authors and get the right set of ideas into the book to begin with, it will. Luckily, we're starting with the greatest collection of authors that you could possibly hope for writing a book like this. I can't imagine a better collection of people, you know, unless you went to like Singularity University or something like that. But a lot of these people are involved with Singularity University, and I would put the people who've been on this show up against any other group of human beings for writing this book. What do you think?
Yeah. Absolutely. These are interesting folks. But beyond that, I mean, beyond the fact that they're interesting and brilliant and all that, they are plugged in. They really are, you know, living and trying to understand the future. So these guys, you know, if you're gonna write about the future, let's go to the people that are thinking about it, and that's what we're gonna do. The people that have
Absolutely.
Been visitors on the show. These are the guys that are really thinking about, you know, where do we go from here? And we'll start with these folks as many of our authors going forward. So that's going to be a great one.
Well, and I realize what I forgot to mention, and this is part of, to me, the most exciting part of this is this whole project will probably occur in two flavors. Okay, there will be a general public version of it, and there will be a version of it aimed just at education, just at schools. And what we would do then is have individual classrooms or students within classrooms or schools against each other within a district or districts within a state competing with each other to come up with the best ideas and come up with their own best collections of these ideas. So in addition to creating a 99-chapter abridged edition, we would have schools all over the place, potentially, creating their own abridged editions. I think I mentioned that there would be a set number of categories that all of the improvements would be in. We haven't defined that list yet, but I'm thinking it'll be somewhere between, I don't know, 5 and 15 items. The number that I've pegged right now is 9. I keep thinking, you know, there'll probably be about 9 topics. And the only reason I say that is because we used to do 10 topics for the world transformed, right? It was always those 10 big transformations. So we might build the topics around those 10, and one of them was the singularity. So I don't think you have to have that as a topic. You can give ideas within the other categories. That will explain how we get to the singularity. But within a given education environment, that would be a great way to structure the exercise. So, say you've got a class of high school students, high school sophomores. This could be in an English class. It could be in a science class. It could be in just social studies. It might be. And you take those 9 categories, whatever they are, medicine, the environment, the economy, whatever the categories would be, but have each student write their best idea for each one of those and pick the best one for each category, and then you've compiled a short book within the context of your class giving, you know, their 9 best ideas for how to make the world a better place in each of those categories. Or who knows, if it's a bigger school, you might pick the top 3, and then you've got a nice book of 27 ideas. But the idea is... we would ideally have incentives in place for the kids participating in this over and above just the honor of being part of this book, which hopefully everyone's going to do just because it's exciting to be a part of it, in terms of either a competition for a scholarship, or we might be seeding these schools with books like the World Transformed, books like abundance, the rational optimist.
Singularity is near.
Singularity is near. The infinite resource. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. We might do like a big giveaway, right? Kids who write particularly good ones or who win their school contest, their class contest, whatever it would be, would get a copy of one of those books. Or maybe, you know, the school would get a whole library if one of theirs is selected as the winner at a certain level. Those specifics will work out as we go, but the idea is to create kind of a competition and to get young people really excited about it, that really interested in it. And the great thing is, everything that gets done in the education context, everything that gets done for kids who are learning and who are doing projects within their own school, all those chapters would also end up in the larger book too. So nothing would, you know, they might be competing amongst themselves to see who gets into their copy of the book, but all the ones that are entered, you know, assuming they actually have an idea that meets the criteria that I described just a few minutes ago, they would all come into the book, because we want this to be as big as it can be. And I'm particularly interested in and excited about the idea of getting young people interested and excited about this. I think that one of the reasons for doing this, one of the reasons for doing the abridged edition, and one of the reasons for doing the full edition, is to get these ideas out there where people can act on them. And who are the people who are going to have the most leverage, right, the longest runway to make any of these things happen? Well, you know, the younger you are, the theoretically, the more future you got, right? So
that may not always be the case with the radical life extension, but yeah, in the world we live in right now, you're exactly right, Phil. So
yeah, for now, yeah. That's the model that works, and I'll be happy for that to get for that model to be retired at any time. And I believe that was pretty much my first question for the Radical Life Extension Conference. But until that happens, these are the people we really want working on this. I mean, we want everyone working on it. But in particular, if you're young, you got a lot of energy, you got a lot of great ideas, tell us what your great ideas are, and let's get to work on these.
You know, and what excites me about bringing kids into this is that, to a large extent, I think the kids are hungry for this sort of stuff. I think all too often the educational process becomes more about checking certain boxes. How about we give these kids an opportunity to be creative, learn how to write. I think the very process of putting your ideas down on paper and playing devil's advocate with your own ideas so as to come up with something that, you know, really sells your ideas, and writing it out that way, it's an amazing learning process. It makes you a better writer. It makes you a better thinker. And, it reminds me of a lot of what we did as bloggers, although this is not going to be blogging. This is writing a book, but it will teach particularly these young people how to think and how to write. And we often teach kids, you know, you need to be reading. Well, yeah, that's great, but you also need to be writing, and it needs to be you don't just sit back and absorb all your life. You need to be putting stuff out there as well.
Putting it out there, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, writing, yeah, it's a mode of thinking. It's an external mode of thinking. It's the first step, really. You're going back to last week's topic. It's the first step in taking an idea and making it real. Write it down, you know, or say it out loud. Maybe is the very first step. But getting it out of your own head and into a format that other people can begin to internalize it, respond to it, do something with it, is a huge step to take in terms of making an idea real. And I couldn't agree more. You know, I worked as a tech writer for many years before I became a blogger, and I learned the same lesson slightly different ways in both of those settings, which is that the best way to learn something is to write about it.
Right.
You know, you can't write a software manual without knowing a good one, without knowing the program you're writing about inside and out. I would write documentation and training, and I'd always start with the training, because the training was this step-by-step, here's how you do this thing. And by by coming to an understanding sufficient to enable me to write things down, I really learned it. Same thing with blogging. You know, I was always interested in the future, but I learned so much about all the topics that we talk about on this program from writing about it at The Speculist, and also from talking about it with you on this show and so many of the guests that we've had. Yeah, get people to start externalizing their ideas, and you're part of the way there towards making those things real. You're not, you know, you're not far enough. There's still a lot more that has to happen, but you're infinitely farther than you were if somebody's just thinking about it, or worse yet, not thinking about it, right? So so we're taking a couple of great steps in the right direction.
That's right, and you know, these books are not just going to sit on the shelf. They'll be out there for people to read, and so you have all these ideas circulating. And you know, what author talks about ideas having sex? You know, and
Matt Ridley,
and having little, yeah, Matt Ridley, and having little children ideas that come from those ideas, and you know that and. You know, intermingling and coming up with new stuff all the time. I see this book is could be a breeding ground for ideas, and I think that would be marvelous. I would love that.
Well, you know, it's great that you mentioned that wonderful idea from Matt Ridley of ideas having sex, because that idea is mentioned in another great book, The Infinite Resource by Ramez Nam, who's going to be on the program next week talking about his new novel, Crux, by the way, so everybody wants to tune into that. But I was talking to Ramez yesterday, and he's actually got a large quantity of copies of that book standing by that he's ready to distribute to schools. So we're actually going to be incorporating getting copies of The Infinite Resource to schools as part of our overall program here that they're going to be working on with The World Transformed. And also, while talking to Ramez, I am happy to announce that he is going to be an author of one of the 99 chapters of The World Transformed, the abridged edition. How exciting is that?
Very exciting. This is a guy that, you know, he has written some of the best books about these topics that are out there. If you haven't read his nonfiction, you need to get out there and read his nonfiction. I say that in one breath and in the next breath. If you haven't read his fiction, you need to do that too. The guy can write. Okay, he's his fiction is as fascinating as his nonfiction, and vice versa. It's just good stuff. I need to read.
Well, you need
this
to
guy.
Read Nexus and Crux by next Wednesday, or we're going to spoil it for you. We won't spoil it. And anyone who listened to our review of Nexus last year now knows that that discussion we had about the big ending sequence was just made up. And those things didn't really happen, but. But yeah, Ramez is great. He's going to be contributing a chapter, and he's also agreed to be an advisor on the project for us. So we're really excited to have a best-selling author, a guy who is really making significant contributions, both in the fiction and in the nonfiction world, and in particular in understanding accelerating change and in working to make the world a better place. And speaking of that, we have one other author signed up that I should mention. A fellow you may have heard of, we've had him on the program a couple of times before, Mr. Ray Kurzweil has agreed to write a chapter of our book. So I think, you know, the fact that Stephen, you and I are writing a book with Ramez Nam and Ray Kurzweil pretty much makes my year. I don't know how you feel about it.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, these guys are heroes because of what they have written, and I mean, just some awesome stuff. And to be involved in a project with these guys is huge. So, yeah, absolutely.
It's incredibly exciting, and we look forward to sharing additional details with you all about it in the weeks to come. Actually, you're going to be hearing a lot about this. No matter what topic we're talking about week to week, we'll also probably be coming back to this because we'll have updates as we go. Once again, we'll be talking with our co-author, Ramez Nam, next week about his novel, Crux. So, Stephen, what's our music? I see we're running close on time here.
Yeah, the music tonight is Let the Sun by Ben Smith.
Let the Sun. Have we had this before?
No, this is brand new.
That's just a familiar sounding, or just it resonates, I guess. Let the Sun by Ben Smith. Well, thanks, Stephen, for putting that together. Thank you all for listening to The World Transformed. Don't forget to join us next week with Ramez Nam talking about Crux. Also, if you've got a great idea for a question for the Radical Life Extension Conference, please leave a comment info@worldtransform.com. We look forward to being with you all again next week, and until next time, live to see it.
Spending time with myself. It's a nice day. Might have to drink a bit or two. Drinking with the lads, not by myself. Let the sun. Let the sun shine through me. Let the sun shine through you. Remain innocent.